Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Excellent. Yes. And today we're going to do a documentary. Not really. This is an Indian movie called Doom Laga Ke Haisha. Did I do it justice?
I have no clue.
Okay. But that's what it's called.
They sing it too fast in that song for me to be able to tell.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. 2015, directed by Sharat Kataria, and stars Ayushman Khurrana and Bhumi Pednekar. I hope I did that okay, but they were both absolutely terrific. I was a fan of them both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we already in our family have seen Ayushman many times because he's fairly well known and he takes a lot of really different, interesting parts, I think. And he's good in every one we've ever seen. So
very good. And there were some actors in the background. One or two that I felt like I recognized.
Oh yeah.
Like his dad.
Yeah. We've he was seen the policeman in Bola.
Okay.
The mm-hmm. old policeman who was holding down the prison
mm-hmm.
against the crazy drug gang.
And in this he wielded a slipper with great acumen. He was very good at it.
Yes, great skill and expertise. Mm-hmm. He was never afraid to pull off the slipper and start hitting.
Yeah.
And Bhumi, whose last name I don't have in front of me, but this was her first role.
Hmm.
She was a casting agent for Yash Raj Films, which is huge, and who was producing this. And I think they were shooting at their studio. But anyway, so her boss said, "Oh, you can act. Great. Start losing weight." And she was overweight, but not what you see in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had started going to the gym and dieting and everything. And then this role came up and they needed a fat actress. And she called her up and went, "Stop going to the gym. In fact, start eating more. You have to gain like 30 pounds for this."
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. she weighed, she was fat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And she's beautiful. You could see from her face anyway.
Yeah, she's
beautiful.
Very pretty. Yeah.
And you see the pictures now and she's slimmed down and everything. But she was perfect for the role.
Yeah, yeah. She did just a terrific job. That's cool that it's her first role. Must mm-hmm. have been fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So what region are we looking at here? Or what language, I guess?
Hindi.
Hindi, okay.
It's a Bollywood movie.
Bollywood movie, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, I'm still learning. And this one had a lot of cultural things. So we were looking at two, I would guess you would call middle to lower class families?
Yeah, they didn't have any money, did they?
No, no. And then we got to see the marriage tradition and the arranged marriage tradition and we even divorce proceedings. and I'm assuming that they're accurate. I don't know enough to know.
Yeah, because what's interesting about this movie is it's modern. I mean, it's set in 1995. But it's not like the romantic comedies we've seen where there's a lot of singing and dancing. It's very Western style.
Yeah.
It's looking at the problems people actually have nowadays if they go along with an arranged marriage and then find out it's two modern people who have different ideas about things. And how do the families act
mm-hmm.
when the couple's not acting in the way that's expected by both the families? So it's interesting because Aditya Chopra is somebody who had been a real driving force between his father who founded Yash Raj and then him who kind of modernized it at the needed point and carried on with newer, fresher movies, made Shah Rukh Khan a star, all these things, mm. right? And he wanted to not have it end with him, so he was opening it up to other directors and giving people he trusted chances and everything. This was one of the first movies that happened for. And he went, and he loves to go to the movies. He would go and watch movies just with an audience, just to see the movies that other people were making. And always felt like he was kind of up to date on it. And he went to watch this movie when they were getting it ready. They said, okay, we're ready for the first run through. And he came away going, I do not understand modern movies. Because to him, this wasn't a great movie. Hmm. He didn't like all that modern stuff, you know, but it was really popular.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't mean he quit making movies or anything, but, you know, it was just kind of interesting. I think he...
Sharat Kataria?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's done 5 movies, it says.
Okay.
He's written 14, but directed 5.
So he was a writer.
Yeah. Okay. So this one was his second, it looks like. And then a couple of shorts. And then one called Sui Daga.
Sui Daga is amazing. And we will watch it sometime. It's wonderful. Should watch it. Definitely. Well, what I was going to say then, it kind of gives you an idea of the contrast between this movie and the kind of a more traditional look in the sense of movies. So Aditya Chopra directed Rabna Bana Dajoti, right? Yeah. With Shah Rukh Khan and Anushka Sharma. And when you think about that movie and this one, they're both kind of looking at the same thing, but they're looking at it in such different ways.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, think about how different one is. There's all the singing and the dancing and how do they approach the problem. And of course, they're different kind of romantic comedies, but this new one is not in that genre of romantic comedy at all, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So that just kind of gives you the idea of this one made a leap.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, it was more... It's more of something that I would be used to seeing, I guess. You know, a romantic comedy in the United States is more lots Western. Of talking, right? Lots of talking, and you know, obviously no musical numbers usually,
right?
And a comedy, and a couple that is struggling somehow gets together in the end somehow, you know.
And also, we see them fighting.
Yeah.
And complaining about each other to like their family or friends or whatever.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening. That doesn't happen in the same way in a lot of other more idealized romantic comedies.
Right. Yeah.
And that is kind of what makes this a little bit more realistic feeling too.
Yeah. It's definitely felt real. Yeah. I didn't catch how they got connected in the first place. I know it was an arranged marriage and, the family,
I think just through a matchmaker or something.
Just through a matchmaker. Yeah. Okay. So I know that the family of our guy, let's see, what is his name? Sorry, the script. Okay, Prem, right.
Prem, yeah.
So the family of Prem, our male lead, so apparently when they get married, she moves in with the family, you know, which includes his parents, both his parents and an aunt. So they live in a very small house, and apparently what they're thinking is, hey, if you do this arranged marriage, you're going to marry this person with a degree, a college degree, and she wants to be a teacher, and that's going to help us financially. So you really kind of need to do this.
Yeah, the money's going to contribute to the family. You're not married. You're old enough to be married.
Right. So I thought that was interesting reasons for that. And we can't forget, you know, I love the cassette tape thing. That was really cool. Just to do that for a living would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, so talk about that.
Yeah, so he's making copies. Yeah, he's making copies of audio tapes, audio cassettes. And he clearly really likes it, or he wants to be away from his family, maybe. I don't know. You can't really tell.
He loves it. He loves the music, I think.
Right, he does like the music. So... but that's what he does. He makes these tapes and sells them.
And he's got a little shop. He and his father have a shop, and I think his father did it before him.
Really small shop and just lined with cassette tapes. But unfortunately, CDs have just been released, and it is shaking their foundations. You know, it's like, what do we do now? You know?
Yeah, there's a rival shop.
Yeah,
that before they were just rivals because they both did the same thing, and now this guy has redone his shop And you can come in and you can do a little recording possibly, but the sound quality is better and they're doing CDs, baby.
Yep, CDs.
Yeah. Yep. And it's the family is, they don't know what to do. And in many senses, I think it's kind of an interesting choice because the family is faced by the modern world in a couple ways they don't expect. And so one is the way that the arranged marriage, the people are both unhappy and not acting in the way that everybody keeps going, just why don't you just do this? This is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And like the wife will say, the Sandhya will say, well, you're not respecting me. And they're like, that doesn't have anything to do with it. You be quiet and listen to your elders, you know. And the son will say something and the father will go after him with his slipper because that you shouldn't talk to us that way kind of thing. And I'm making it sound mean, but this is just the clashing of these new ideas and the old ones. And the CD shop is the same thing. They have to, how do we change?
That's how really can great. We adapt? Yeah. That's a really great aspect of this. Yeah. The old versus the new. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the reason that I was questioning whether he liked it or not, or was in love with what he was doing or not, I felt like he was using it all the time as excuses not to be somewhere.
Oh, sure.
You know, so he liked the work just fine, I felt like, but he was like, oh, I've got, you know, I'm so busy, I can't hang out with you guys, or, you know, those kinds of things. And he used it all the time.
I think also he was dissatisfied with everything in his life.
Absolutely.
So even though he liked it, you were not going to know that from him ever acting enthusiastic, except about the one singer who he loved so much.
Yeah.
And that was an actual real singer.
I imagine that it was. It was like everybody was amazed.
Kumar Sanu.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everybody was amazed that he was there.
The song at the end.
It'd be like Sting or something.
He was great too. I just loved it when he showed up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we've skipped way ahead in terms of, I don't think we've talked about anything that people couldn't hear and they still watch the movie, but just to give a super brief synopsis, there's an arranged marriage. The son of the one family is not interested in getting married because he just doesn't like anything. He's just a real negative Nelly, so to speak. And the girl from the other family, Sandhya, she seems open to it. She's kind of interested. They have the meeting of the two families. The guy says something funny and she kind of gives a little smile, you know, so you can see she's willing to go along with it. This seems like a good idea. And they get married, and then the son's lack of interest in he's mad at his family for making him get married. And so he's taking it out on the wife in terms of like he won't consummate the marriage. He's acting out in every way he can that's just kind of a passive, aggressive, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah, right.
And at the same time, they're struggling with the problem we were talking about, which is they're confronting this idea of what is a CD, and oh no, it's going to take all our business away. How do we even make a living?
Right.
And then at the same time, as the husband and wife get to know each other, they're having their own conflicts, aside from things like, you know, some of it's fueled by the family forcing him to get married, but some of it's just fueled by they don't listen to each other. Or they don't talk to each other.
They absolutely do not,
So all these things go along with every so often what starts to get mentioned is they'll be putting up posters, I guess, for the wife-carrying race, the annual wife-carrying race, and you don't know what it is. But eventually, a wager gets put on this wife-carrying race that becomes very important. And one of the things, as we mentioned at the very beginning, see, this is really kind of a, sorry, we slid into this sideways, really. But she is extremely overweight. And I mean, this isn't just like 20 pounds overweight and we're pretending she's fat because it's Hollywood or Bollywood. This is, she's fat. And there's no doubt about it. You don't care, actually, because she's also beautiful and sweet and smart and all the things. However, when you think of a wife-carrying race, you look at this slender, wiry fellow and go, man, I don't know. How can he carry her and race at the same time? So you're kind of interested in that the whole time. Because obviously, if they're mentioning it through the movie, this thing's going to happen. And it's in the poster, mm-hmm. and it's called Heave Ho, Carry That Reload. And it's all the things, you know. So this is always going on. And the question is always going to be, will they participate in the race? And if so, what does that mean? And that's really it. Yeah. It's charming. It's very charming. Sweet. It's funny in places. You feel their problems. You understand their problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're both facing and they're both trying to work through as a married couple.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the families. I liked both the families. The families also are relatable. So there's not really a villain in it, I don't think, other than maybe the guy who wants to put them out of business with his CD shop.
Right, yeah.
And he's not really a villain. He's just, you know, a businessman.
Yep, just doing his thing. Yep, mm-hmm. for sure. But he was so brooding and so, nasty.
Oh.
It was really hard to, you know,
Prem.
Yeah. Prem. And Prem, it got to a point where I was like, come on, man, you know, when is this going to turn around? You know, 'cause I am sick of you. And then it went on a little further than that. And then things turned, you know. He turned much later than I was wanting him to. You know, it was like, yeah, come on, buddy, can you? But the thing is, you know, it's internal. It has nothing to do with her, and mm-hmm. I think that's what was realized. But he was so dissatisfied with his life and his accomplishments and his lack of these things. He was just extremely insecure about what he saw as a failure, right? I think that's how he felt, and that's what was spilling over.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was blaming everybody else in his life, because of course that's what we do when we're miserable. We take it out on everyone else, but he was, you know, this is your fault.
Yeah, and jealousy.
The father or the, right.
We get all seven sins in there.
he's
so jealous of, you know, a friend of his. Mm-hmm. You know, and it all got focused on her, you know, because she's overweight and he's just like, look at my misery, you know, and he would talk to friends about it. And then his friend would marry a slimmer person and he'd be like, mm-hmm. oh, you know, you, you know, just so jealous. And it was mm-hmm. it was all him. It was all just inside himself.
Yeah, because he looked at everything as a reflection on him. It's that thing where he was the center of his own world. And what we see is how miserable that makes you. And I think we've talked about this before, but, you know, you have to, as a Catholic, one of the things you're taught basically is happiness lies in serving other people. Whether it's just your family, your spouse, your parents, your siblings, your friends, your, you know, it's just thinking of them first.
Yeah.
Can this make their day a little easier? And I don't mean you just go around thinking that way all the time, but you try to not say that mean thing. You try to, you know, you just try to be a nice person to them.
Yeah.
And he did not have any of those qualities. You really do hate him. And I do have to say, this actor, one of his specialties seems to be playing unlikable people.
Mm.
Sometimes the people remain unlikable in the movies he's in, and sometimes they turn it around.
Yeah.
That's what I think was a good quality. He was good for this because he did turn it around, and he pulled it off in such a way that you bought it.
I was surprised. Yeah. Like I said, that's how I was feeling about him. I was just like, man, this guy just needs to go. And, and then, you know, I guess we can talk about anything at this point, right? But there's a point at which things really come to a head and he threatens suicide, you know, which really this explosion of him finally presenting to the world everything, right? It's all come out of him. And I think that he can see that he's the problem, because the thing that occurs is, you know, he finds a little spot to sit and cry, and then she happens to find a spot nearby. She doesn't know he's there, but she finds a spot nearby and she's just weeping. And finally, he's like, I've really affected someone else here and it bothers me. Right. And he goes and he sits next to her. And then that was the turnaround. And suddenly, and again, this is just kudos to this actor, but after that, suddenly I'm rooting for him, right? It's like, oh, this is a couple now, and they're working this out, you know, and you know, suddenly he became reasonable. He became kind of sober. He would, they would talk frankly about things, getting stuff out. And, you know, he would even say, you know, cause she was going to go get a job as a teacher, you know, but, and she found one in another town. And it's kind of far away. It takes 3 buses to get there, I guess. And so, she said, but you could come, you know, it takes 3 buses, but you could come. And, you know, he just feels like he's let her down so bad at that point. And it's not even mean now. I feel something completely different for him, but he's like, this is not going to work out. I have done so much damage to this that, you know, I'm not even going to offer to come visit or anything. It's like, I'm not worthy of this anymore.
Well, also, I think he could see it wasn't practical. That's one of those things where you start off going, and every other weekend I'll come see you. And eventually you're just like, it takes 3 buses and all day to get there. I'm not doing that.
And she's longing for him just to say, no, I really want you to just stay. Right. That's what she's fishing for.
Which is what she tells him at the end of the race, saying, don't send me away. I want to stay here. And that's, you know, when they're winning the race. And it's beautiful because by then they've learned to open up and tell each other what they want and be vulnerable.
You need to say the things.
Right. Well, and that's what I liked about the talk they had on the steps when she's sobbing and he's around the corner just feeling terrible and everything. And they have to show their vulnerability to each other. They do it accidentally because of that whole situation. But then because of that, they're willing to stay open like that and talk about, no one's going to want to marry me.
Yeah. You know, and he says, that's what she feels, right?
That's what she feels. And she's probably right. I mean, you know, if they're just going by appearance, and he says at one point, right, I'm not worthy of being loved.
Yep.
When they're talking about it, he's really saying, here's how I really feel. I don't deserve it. And so because of that, that's when they can start to rebuild by going, let's do the wife race. That comes a little later, but it's like, yeah, let's do it. And she's in for it. She's like, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah. And there's that pressure from his family, you know, his dad and mom have done it. Did it like 4 years, or I think he said 4 times. I can't remember, you know. He said, oh, we didn't win. But it's the doing it, right? It's the doing it, which is the message for him.
It's right. Like, that's what the aunt says. The aunt says, he goes, we'll never win. And she goes, don't do it to win. Do it for yourself.
Right.
Just do it to do it. And that's the message he needed to hear, because all his expectations have been put on him by his family. He couldn't pass high school. He couldn't learn to speak English. He's maybe going to lose the CD shop or the shop because they can't do the CDs. And the bet was, if you win the wife carrying race, which everybody is laughing about, I'll give you my CD shop, says the guy, the competitor. So it's all, everything he's done has been defined by other people's expectations that he's not been able to live up to. Then he marries Sandhya, who is a high school graduate, who's a college graduate, who's going to be a teacher herself, who speaks English well. And then what does he do? He finds the thing that you can really make fun of, which is she's very fat. And of course that's off-putting when you don't expect it, but he's not looking at anything else she is except as an affront to him because he can't do those things.
Right. An example to him of things that he cannot do.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he feels like she's flaunting it.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, one of my favorite things. This is just when they're fighting later on. And she's got a favorite singer. And I think this is the favorite singer who, I think both his favorite and her favorite, I think both those singers sang the song that gets danced to after the movie's over.
Oh, that's cool.
That you see.
And I was wondering, so was the song that he was playing the singer that showed up at the thing at the end?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
That's I figured the one, maybe, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, that guy, when he shows up, his friend looks at him and goes, "It's so-and-so." Everybody knows he loves this singer more than anyone. And he looks back at her over his shoulder, and they both kind of give each other a look like, hey, just a tiny smile, like, it's good luck. How exciting, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the singer who shows up. And then, the thing where he's going to go take a bath and he's put on his music really loud. And this is really one of those communal family setups where they don't have a big house like we've seen in some other things like Robin Bonadajoti or other Piku or anything where there's a big courtyard and all the rooms. This is kind of like they're living on top of a building and then there's rooms built around the edges and that's where the family lives. You know, they're outside most of the time on the porch part and then the rooms are for sleeping or cooking or bathing or whatever. Yeah, and so
practically falling over each other in that place.
Yes. They're
five
on top
of them. Yeah.
Yes. And so he's playing the music loud so he can hear it in the bathroom. So the whole family can hear it. And she's furious. So she goes and takes his out and puts hers in really loud. And the doors open up and he's covered with soap with a towel around his waist. And he's stomping back. And I just love it because then she's like, the minute he gets back in, she changes it again. I only wish I knew what the lyrics to the songs were because they didn't translate those. And I was like, I bet those are very pointed about something too.
Yep.
But I just loved that.
I loved it too. Yeah, that was really funny stuff.
Yeah.
Really funny stuff. And then we definitely need to talk about the divorce scene because that was hilarious. The moms, for one thing. So so there's a point at which she leaves him and goes back to her family. And eventually a divorce proceeding happens and both families come together. It's like everybody comes to this thing. And, it was just so funny. Oh, they were crying. The two moms crying over each other. What have our kids done? And, it was just really funny. It was really, what have they done to us?
Yeah. It's like, what have we done to deserve this kind of thing? And they're just sitting there. And one mother had fallen down or something.
Yeah.
She's on an IV. And so the other mother is holding her IV. And I love the judge who's going, wait, what? So what's the deal? Mm-hmm. And they both start complaining about each other. And it's obvious they're just mad. They had a fight. They're mad. They haven't reconciled any differences. And he goes, have you been actually physically hurt or anything like this? No. Okay. Well, the Marriage Act says you have to live together for 6 months before you can get divorced. Then come back. Goodbye.
See you later.
And then her mother says, now she's your mother. You have to take care of her and you be sure you do here. And she hands her the IV.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it was so funny.
It was the mothers were together on this deal. I loved it.
Yeah.
There's a certain wisdom in that because they still disagreed with each other and disliked the way they were being treated by each other and all these things or imagined insults or whatever. But that time gave them time to have to talk to each other. And it worked.
Yeah. And eventually it broke
through. And get divorced.
Yeah. Eventually it broke through. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it was really good. Like I said, that change in him, she changed too, but it was not near as prominent. I mean, he had a life-changing event, it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was his problem.
Yeah, it was his problem. And then the race. I can't believe how I felt during that.
Edge of your seat?
On the edge of my seat.
You were so excited?
It was, I really was. I was like rooting for them hard. And it was great. Perfectly done.
Well, yeah, because the race, the first time I saw this movie, I thought, they race in a straight line from A to B or whatever. I didn't think, first of all, the race was going to be on sand.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, through this, all these obstacles, the tires, the up these stairs and along this walkway that has a sharp turn in it. down these stairs and then through this muddy pit of water. You really have to know what you're doing. And the thing that was funny is as they go along, what you see is they haven't had to work together before like this. But as they go along, their new understanding of each other allows them to be a little bit open, so that when she says, here's how to do the tire thing, and he automatically responds the way he always does, which is, don't tell me what to do. But he listened because he started doing it.
Right. Yeah. And that whole thing is a metaphor for marriage, though, isn't it?
The whole race. Heave-ho, carry that load. Yeah. It is. Absolutely.
You know, the thing that would have been better is if they had traded off and she had to carry him for part of it. Right? Well, then it would have been more perfect.
Yes.
But the whole idea of these turns and the water and, you know, all this other stuff that we go through together.
Get through it doing their own specialty, right? Which is how it works in marriage also. Each person is good at different things. So when at some certain point she's saying something and he's like, hold on tighter.
Yeah.
Do it like this. So they're each telling each other what they need from that person or what that person needs to help with, too.
Yeah.
And so that by the time they get out of that pit and they both laughed at each other because they're covered with mud and it's a real moment of camaraderie that they've never had.
Yeah. And when she reaches down to help him out of the water.
And then she reaches down and he takes her hand without hesitation, without even thinking, I should be doing this. I'm not the strong one now. He just does it. He just takes it.
Yeah, and that's a real breakthrough for him, for his character, too, who never would have done that at the beginning of the movie, not ever, not once.
No
matter who it was. It wasn't even having to do with his wife. He's like, not going to do that, because he was way too prideful.
Yeah. Boy, wasn't he, though.
Mm-hmm. But that was a good moment. And then at the after the race was over, when they passed the finish line and he just kept going. I love the announcer said something like, and there they go. Or I can't remember what he said, but it was like, and they are not stopping.
They're still going.
And then he ran all the way home. And it was really nice.
They were able to express themselves fully in their love. And so
had some for time all the delicate people,
there are actually a couple of kisses out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were good kisses. It was really close. Good. And because that expresses exactly how far they've come.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he still runs and carries her all the way home because that's when if you didn't get that this is marriage before, you get it now. And he's willing to run and carry her as far as they need to go.
Yeah.
You know, it was really great.
It was really good. Yeah.
Oh, I'm smiling just thinking.
Cheers, cheering. Yep.
Yes, come on. Yes.
Yeah, I was there.
I had the dogs with me. I was watching it. I was pounding one of them. I was petting one. I kind of patting him, and I patted him harder and harder. He's looking at me like, what's going on? I'm like, it's okay, boy. And he's like, okay.
oh my goodness. Yeah.
Well, so one of the other things that could not have helped this was we were talking about how everybody's falling all over each other in both the households, but we really see them as a married couple only in Prem's family's household. And I mean, it's to the point where they can tell from the bed squeaking that our son has become a man, says the mother to the father. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Please don't say these things out in public. You know, we get it. We know you're listening. And we know everybody's on, but can we just be like the Japanese and put up etiquette walls, please? Every fight that's had, every lie that's told, all the things get found out one way or the other.
Yeah.
And that's a hard circumstance for marriage, too.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got to step towards each other. You got to forgive. Yep. That's all part of it. Yeah.
Here's what the two mothers said.
Why is God punishing us? Oh, my
God. With the divorce.
Oh my goodness.
So,
that is so funny. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, sorry. That does no, call that back made
me,
to that.
Yeah. Effort, oh, that makes me happy.
Yeah.
But it's funny. That's funny. Yeah.
Well, so, because the other thing the aunt said was thinking of what's useful has never done anything for us. Do it for yourselves. And that's what she's talking about running that race. And it made me think about that family who everything in the family was toward what's useful that's good for the family. This, they wanted him to get a degree. That's why.
Yeah.
It would help them make more money. Because they don't care if he hit. They're not educated. That's the only reason he had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're going to marry somebody like, you know, marry someone who's got a degree. She can make us some money. And it's not to say they're not poor and they don't need to think this way, but the idea of what is also.
Mm.
And I feel like you can do both.
Right. Yeah. That's, I think that would be what you'd strive for is both. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, and I think prim. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying you can have that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Because Prem was very unlikable for a lot of the time, and I did want to give him a couple of tight slaps, but when the aunt said that, I suddenly just thought, well, his family didn't help.
That's very true, yeah.
He's kind of a product of how they thought. The aunt was always mad at the husband who left her, and it's not that she didn't need to be mad, but it got brought up and used in every circumstance possible. She was a continual victim.
So she was carrying that load everywhere with her, and that was his example, you know. But it was amazing that, you know, she got the phone call that her husband had died, who she'd been away from for years, and that just broke her. She, you know, so I mean, spent her whole life staying away from somebody that she loved because of some fight or something. I mean, just carrying that thing is destructive.
Well, or the fact that he left her, maybe that she found out he didn't want her. So what are all the reasons she came up with?
Yeah.
That he's awful, that she wasn't responsible, or she took all the blame on herself. And again, this is like Prem. And it's not, I mean, we all recognize this behavior because we can all do it. It is so easy to instantly blame the other person.
Mm.
I mean, this is from Adam in the Garden of Eden, right?
Yeah.
This woman you gave me, Lord, she took this apple and gave it to me, or this fruit and gave it to me, and this snake. It's not my fault.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it's really easy, at least for me, to just kind of go, oh, if these people hadn't done this and this. And you really have to work to keep yourself out of that way of thinking if you haven't been raised to kind of point these things out to you.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, even if you have had these things pointed out to you, you know.
Agreed.
Yeah, there's just something in our nature, you know, a selfishness or something that, hypersensitivity. Yeah, we seem to have that. At least I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I carry that around. But yeah, but then, you know, you get to this point, you know, which was such the great character moment in there where finally it all breaks and you come out of there feeling weightless. You know, it's like, you know, you finally put that thing down, whatever it is.
Right. Well, and I like that it makes me think of when this is earlier, but they're out talking about the fact that it's not working. And she's looking out at the water and he says, well, you know, they're like, well, we'll go ahead and get divorced, but, and I'll help you find someone. I'll help you find somebody who will look and understand you the way you are. And this is before they're on the steps.
Yeah, right.
And who will take care of you and appreciate you and everything. And she just said, I thought that would be you.
Yeah.
And then he says something about himself and she says, no, but I don't think that's really true. Or, you know, but this quality here, or, you know, I liked you. He's like, I don't even know why you married me. She goes, oh, I liked you or whatever.
Yeah.
And, each of them suddenly has a way to think about their own role that is a little different than they've been thinking about it before.
Right. Because she counters with, you know, when I'll find you a girl that will do this.
That's it.
Right. And they've just told each other that they understand each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know that this is what you need.
Yeah. And so a regular rom-com would have each of them helping the other one succeed where they had failed.
Mm-hmm.
And accomplishing those goals, whatever they are. She didn't need him to become a teacher. She would get thin.
Yeah.
And he would learn English or get his degree or whatever it is. Or get that. His record shop. She'll help him get his record store himself, you know, whatever, his CD store. But they didn't do that. They instead opened up about what they really wanted as people by showing their vulnerabilities and saying, here are my hopes and dreams. And so in that sense, it was their ability to admit their weaknesses and desires to each other in that way that made them able to even see the other person properly and appreciate them. And that's so rare.
Hmm. Yeah, you know? That is something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because you're right. That would have been the normal road for that to have taken. Especially, mm-hmm. I mean, at least the let me teach you English part.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. With that, I mean, I can see the montage. But it's really cool that they did take that route, and it's almost as if their weaknesses are what opened the door, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they shared, right? They both shared this deep weakness, and in the end, saw in each other strength.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
And yeah, it's beautiful.
They each pulled strength from each other by saying, "I admitted this, and you didn't reject me."
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've showed you my deepest thing, and you did not leave.
Yeah, which is the essence of love.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, gosh, this movie's more beautiful than I thought.
It is. It's really good.
But, this director, you would like Sweet Daga. It's not like this, but it's a couple in an arranged marriage struggling together.
Hmm.
In a different way.
That's great. I wrote it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Sui Daga, Made in India.
yes.
And then the description, a heartwarming story of pride and self-reliance, capturing the journey of Mauji and his wife Mamta, who pursue their passion by overcoming all odds, all of them, all the odds. All the odds are overcome. I'm in.
They do.
Yeah.
And it's Anushka Sharma is the wife, and she was the one who was the wife in Robin Abana to Jodi.
Cool.
So she's just good and adorable. And the male, the husband is played by Varun, who you've not seen, but he's like the next, he's like Anushka Sharma, younger than like Shah Rukh Khan, but he's kind of the generation after that. And he's
cool.
He's very good. He's been in a lot of movies where he didn't need to be good, but this shows some of his abilities more. Cool. I like him.
Yeah, I love it. That's neat. I assume Shah Rukh Khan's still hard at it, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He made three movies this year.
Just throw
them out. He's not messing around. I've seen two out of the three. I did not love them, but I understood what they were doing. You know, it was over the top, super, like James Bond type, with all the, with tons of self-referential jokes and things, which we got a lot of them because we've seen enough Bollywood movies. So that kind of movie, which it was good for what it was.
Yeah.
And then another one that was a big action thriller. It was more serious and hardcore, but it was also good, but it was, none of them were, I mean, I've seen those kind of movies plenty of times. They weren't unique. He was amazing because he's Shah Rukh Khan, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, that's how it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So I just see here that Sharat Kataria, who directed the one we're talking about, was one of the writers for Fan.
Oh!
Yeah.
There you go.
The Shah Rukh Khan double role, right?
Mm-hmm. That was a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good stuff. Very good, Shah Rukh.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else to say.
Mm-hmm. Definitely enjoyed this movie a lot. And another one that I appreciate you for. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
It's fun. It's fun. It's good. And I like that it wasn't typical. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good.
So yeah, excellent. I think Hannah and Rose must have talked about this maybe last year on An American's Guide to Bollywood, and I was watching it with Rose, because if this is showing, I'm going to watch it. And I just was like, oh, this is so good. Scott has to see it. And here's the only way I can guarantee you're going to watch it.
Only can guarantee. You bet.
It has to be assigned.
That is too fun. Yeah.
So.
That's right.
Anyway.
I love it. Well, thank you again.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
All right. So what is up next for us? A little bit of nonfiction.
Oh, okay.
Saint Peter, Flawed, Forgiven, and Faithful by Stephen J. Binns.
Oh, he's a good author.
Yeah,
I've read a number of his books.
That's good.
And yeah, of course, Saint
I've
Peter.
Read two, both on Peter by him before. Oh, this one and another one.
Really?
Yeah, okay. It was, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but it really went through the Bible and was taking everything that was in the Bible about Peter and commenting on it is really what the book was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Very good. Very good stuff.
Well, this one I'm partway into, and it's quite good.
Yes. Good. I'm eager to talk about it. Yeah. Talk about our buddy Pete.
Yeah, I was going to say, how can we not want to talk about our first pope?
That's right. Our first pope and somebody who showed us that we don't need to be perfect and we'll still be accepted.
I was just thinking, somebody who shows that the pope puts on his pants one leg at a time, just like the rest of us, right?
That's right.
Or his robes one arm at a time. I don't know how it works.
Yep. Very good. I love it. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yep. See you in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.